This Week in Retronauts, sit, Yamato, sit. Good dog. Welcome, everyone, to Retronauts, and welcome to the first of what I'm going to say will be a two-part series. I pray it's two parts. As we talk about Shinobi, the magic, the mystery, the wonders of Shinobi. I'm your host, Diamond Fight. Am I a ninja? I'm not saying. And here with me are two guests from the European region of the planet Earth. Let's start in the UK, which is not Europe, but it's close enough.
Yeah, well, it used to be, but hello, I'm Stuart Jip, and they call me Shinobi because my knob goes down to my shin. That's not true. Oh. I don't know why I said it. It's a huge mistake. It's a lie. It's much less impressive than that. Hello.
I see you're playing the part of Blue Ninja today. You're working blue.
I am. Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Okay. Dear Lord. All right. And joining us in the nation of Germany...
Hello, my name is Thomas Nickel, and I firmly demand that my name is put with a copyright into the title of this podcast.
I think we can make that happen.
We'll see. We'll see. Is that a C or a TM or an R?
Should be a C, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? You've got a C in your last name, so we'll put a circle around that C. That'll be okay, right?
Yeah, that's fine.
I think that making a demand like that makes you a bit of a C anyway, to be honest.
Hey, Stu, do you need a drink of water? What's going on here?
It's finished now. I'm sorry. I can't pass up an opportunity like that.
Okay.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know I love you, Thomas.
Of course I do. Even if you still get that negative game from me.
Anyway, we have collected ourselves here today. Talk about Shinobi, Sega's long-running franchise about ninjas. And in order to tell the story, I want to take a few minutes here. Not too much time. Don't worry about it. There's no test. You know. There's no quiz at the end of this podcast. But I just want to go over what the hell is Shinobi. Because when we think of Shinobi, we think of ninjas. But what's the difference? And I'm here to tell you what the difference is. Because I live in Japan, and I've studied the language for quite some time. So the basic version, is that Shinobi is actually the older word than ninja. And they're almost identical. They both revolve around this verb, which is Shinobu, which is actually about, like, bearing and enduring hardships. But now, of course, because it's been used for, you know, like a century with ninjas, people also talk about, like, sneaking and stealthiness. But originally it was about, like, you know, hardships or whatever. But the verb is Shinobu, and you put that in a noun form, it becomes Shinobi. And if you write them out, Shinobi no mono, which is like a shinobi person, basically, would just be shortened to shinobi. And if you write them in kanji, those two kanji also look like ninja, which is a long story, but I'm giving you the short version. But there's a long history of shinobi being found in ancient Japanese texts, and even texts that were written by foreigners. For example, the Nippo Jisho, which is something that I think was written by the Portuguese when they visited Japan and like the 17th century. So, like, they had, like, shinobi in their dictionary, because that's a word they heard. So, it's out there. It's written down. We have records of it. It wasn't the only term. There were lots of words for people who did this sort of stuff. And some of these words just didn't catch on. Like, rappa, supa, dako. Can you imagine?
It doesn't sound as cool.
Dako gaiden? Dako gaiden? That does not sound good at all. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Dako gaiden. No.
Donald Dako.
This sounds like taco. I'm hungry now.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
Anyway, this word that we know now, ninja, really caught on, I would say, after World War II, and then it like blew up in a big time in the 80s because there was a real ninja boom in pop culture, both in Japan and then by extension the rest of the world, because everyone got crazy about ninjas because we thought this is the coolest thing ever. They cover their faces, and they throw smoke bombs, and they might have magic powers. And everyone just said, yes, they have magic powers. And we just accepted this for the last 40-plus years.
Yeah, I mean, think about the 60s James Bond, for example. You only live twice. We have ninjas in there.
Yes, that's true. That's late 60s. Fun fact, by the way, the secret ninja training ground that they go to is actually Himeji Castle, which is one of the most popular tourist destinations in all of Japan. So, not very secret.
Yeah, I'd like to go sometime. I did manage when I was in Osaka a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's still standing, Himeji Castle. You can go there. It's lovely. It's a little bit... It's not quite close to Osaka, but if you take the train from there, you can get there. It's like a day trip, you know. It's nice.
It's still Kansai, roughly, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's west... It's west of Osaka, it's west of Kobe, but it's not as far as, like, Hiroshima. It's, you know, it's in the middle there.
Okay.
But yeah, that's a good example of an early, like, a relatively early pop culture, English language pop culture, talking about ninjas. And presumably, I guess, Cyrian Fleming probably heard the word somewhere when he was doing research. Like, oh, ninjas, sounds great. Okay, we have ninjas.
Sorry, man.
So with all this information, I was curious to know... Was Shinobi your first ninja? Like, did you learn about ninjas from Shinobi or something else? And I'm especially interested because I know Europeans have very different attitudes towards the martial arts and ninjas. You know, in America, we had a ninja in every driveway and every cooking pot. Like, we were just drowning in ninjas throughout the 80s. But I want to know your story. Let's start in the United Kingdom, where I don't even know if it's legal for you to say the word ninja. But go ahead, Stu.
Yeah, tell us. Nowadays, I don't think it's really an issue. I mean, the main issue that the UK seemed to have was with, I don't know how to pronounce this correctly, probably because it was banned, but nunchaku.
Yes.
They weren't allowed to be shown on TV or by extension the cinema. I assume there was some sort of regulation because it was, you know, the British Board of Film Classification who just give films their rating and ask for cuts if they need them by law, basically. And I guess Shinobi kind of got away with it because video games didn't actually have any formal regulation at this point, to my knowledge. I mean, we're pre-Mortal Kombat, so I don't think those laws really applied. But like Enter the Dragon... on the poster for that, the nunchaku has been changed to like a bow staff, but it actually kind of looks like he's just holding a big baguette, which is quite funny. And then, you know, later Soul Blade, Li Long's weapon got changed to this Sansetsukan, the staff with the three sections. So kind of triple nunchucks in a way. So I don't know what's going on.
Three are fine, two are very dangerous, obviously. Three is okay.
But the one everyone knows, obviously, is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was changed to Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles for God only knows what reason. And Michelangelo's sort of action shots were just removed, like, until he had his weapon replaced in later season with, like, a grappling hook. But, like, the most ludicrous one is... Secret of the original Ninja Turtles movie, I don't think it had much in the way of censorship. It may have. But the second one, Secret of the Ooze, which I think is pitched younger in general.
Yes.
There is a sequence where they use like a string of sausage, like a link, sausage links as a nunchuck, like as a kind of a bit, you know?
Yeah.
And that. They were like, there's like a story about this on the sort of BBFC website where they're like, okay, we can't cut the sausages. That's ridiculous. We just need to confirm absolutely from the filmmakers that they are in fact sausages and not nunchucks. So they asked them and they're like, yes, they're sausages. And like, okay, we won't cut that. But then James Furman, who was at the top of the BBFC at the time, is like, no, we're cutting the sausages. They look a bit like nunchucks. Cut them out. And James Furman now, dead, which is, you know, very sad, but also great because now we've got ninjas again. and yeah, the BBFC and their sort of general censorship is one of my hobby horses. So thanks for letting me talk about it even briefly. It didn't seem to affect Shinobi for whatever reason, I guess, because video games weren't really looked at then. Maybe if this had still been enforced when formal sort of regulation came in, that may have become an issue, but no, we had games like Shinobi on the Master System. We had The Ninja on the Master System. You know, there's plenty of ninja games, plenty of ninja stuff. But anything with any sort of martial arts movies, you're going to see many minutes of cuts. So it's almost not worth watching the UK versions at all.
I would say Shinobi is pretty light on nunchucks. You don't see it that often, at least in the games we talk about today. So
I think that the nunchucks, we'll talk about it, but I think that as far as the first game goes, they're not actually in the arcade version, just the Master System one. I could be wrong about that, but I remember I had that game and the manual has got the nunchucks in there, clear as day, drawing of them, picture of the nunchucks saying, hey kids, go out and get some nunchucks. I think one of the reasons they were so banned is because A, imitatable, I guess, but B, also they can be concealed, and that was a big deal. for us for some reason.
Sure.
God, I mean, if you're going to conceal a weapon, though, you know, no one's going to bust out the nunchucks. It's just not going to happen. But look, yeah,
all I'm saying is,
I talk too much.
This past weekend, I watched Bruce Lee's The Way of the Dragon, and at one point, he very casually reaches into his pants and pulls out not one, but two pairs of nunchucks, and then he beats an entire alley's worth of Italian thugs, just brutally. Like, it's not even close.
Wow.
He lets one of them take his nunchucks, and he's like, okay, go ahead, swing your nunchuck. And the dude hits himself in the head. Like, it's pure comedy. Pure comedy.
Yeah. That would all be gone from the UK version, all of it. They would just cut to him walking into the alley, and then the next step be a cut, and then he'd just be in, like, McDonald's or something. Being like, wow, that was a really hard fight.
Thomas, enlighten us about the way of German ninjas. What happened over there?
Well, it's interesting because, Germany is notorious for censorship, right? But in this case, nobody seemed really to care too much about all of this. So the Shinobi games were in stores, the Ninja was in stores. We had a few name changes, of course. I mean, Ninja Gaiden became, I think, Shadow Warriors, right? Yeah. And another one became Blue Shadow, stuff like that. But the big ones, they kept their ninjas, especially the Sega ones, of course. And I actually checked today on my boxes. It clearly says Ninja on the back, so...
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that happened, one game got to the German index, which meant no more sales, no more writing about it, but we'll get to that when we get there. But in general, not much of a big deal in Germany, which is surprising, I think.
If I may, is it Der Ninja, Die Ninja, or Das Ninja?
Der Ninja.
Der Ninja, okay.
Yep. They're quite daring.
Too bad. I was hoping for a Die Ninja Nye, but no.
I'm afraid not. If you were to go for plural, of course, that would work.
Right, right.
The ninjas, the.
So, let's dive into the series with, of course, the very first game, which is called, simply, Shinobi. Mm. It debuted in the arcades, 1987, and then they ported it to, I would say, just about every single possible platform at the time, and even subsequently, you know, there are still stories of people porting Shinobi to other consoles to this day, because it's a popular game, people love to work with it.
It sure is.
I was even surprised to learn of a... Java port for mobile phones in the year 2000, which is okay. Sure, someone wanted that.
That seems super early, even for a phone, like mobile game as well.
I mean, if it's Japan, it makes sense. Japanese cell phones were already pretty feature rich by the year 2000.
Feature phones, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that game working pretty well on the phone if you're, you know, one button to sort of jump between the two levels, one middle button to fire and left and right, and maybe six or something to jump. I can see that working. I would probably play that.
I mean, if you're on the train, you're like, what are you going to do? Not play Shinobi?
Yeah, exactly.
Silly? Come on, just play Shinobi. What are you doing? Read a newspaper? Come on.
It was still a bit better than the Spectrum version, which wasn't actually that bad for the Spectrum, honestly, but it, you know, it's a Spectrum game, so it is what it is.
So Shinobi is primarily the brainchild of a man named Yutaka Sugano, and we actually have we'll link to it in the show notes. I found an interview with Sugano in Portuguese, a 2017 Brazilian interview in Portuguese, so, but you can translate it on the internet. You can go ahead and do that and learn about how he worked in this game. He described his role as game mechanics design, level design, bonus stage design, screen layout, and sequence design, and so on. So he was definitely the head of this game. It was his baby, if you will.
Yeah. It does have a feel to it.
That's a lot of stuff he did.
Well, I think it has a sort of a nice authorly feel to it that does kind of carry across to the other games in a way. It is quite, I don't want to jump ahead, but like you've noted here that it plays a lot like Rolling Thunder, which it does.
Yeah.
I think it is a more varied game than Rolling Thunder, and it has a sense of set piece kind of design as well, which I'm very fond of. I mean, in the first game, in the original arcade version, for example, like at the end of the stage, the first stage, you'll get like Kenno attacking you and then walking off. Like they establish that you are moving through a story, you know, in a way that a lot of games still didn't. It's definitely got a nice feel that there was someone behind there making sure it matched a vision, basically.
There is also one thing. I played the game just this morning again, to get a feel for it. And one thing I noticed is from all Shinobi games out there, this one feels the most like a ninja-y game, because in this game you are actually required to... Well, I wouldn't say it's do stealth, but you have are required to play smart. So, you know, there's these guys walking around with the shields up, for example, right?
Yeah.
So they are often paired with guys with guns, so you can't just attack head on. You have to switch the plane, walk behind them, and attack from behind. So this is, I would say, rather ninja style, at
least. Yeah, it has a nice
a lot sort of more sense than later ones.
Yeah, they carry that forward as well in stuff like Shadow Dancer. But yeah, there's a nice sense of strategy to it with the sort of layer switching. And, you know, the fact, I might be mistaken on this, but you have to rescue all the hostages to clear a level.
Yes,
right?
You do.
Yes. I think in the Master System port, which is the one I spent the most time with, which we'll get to, you don't have to do that. It's one of the changes they made. But here, it's not like they're hidden necessarily, but it adds another layer of like, I can't just ignore these guys. I've got to go up there. You have to jump into danger.
And some levels are a bit more sprawling than others, so you have to really go and search for that for them.
Yeah, hostages are often guarded by strong enemies, so you have to like figure out what's the best way to get behind them, or maybe attack them from a distance, and then approach the hostage safely afterwards. So there's definitely some strategy.
There is an incentive. There is an incentive as well as just because you have to, because those hostages will grant you point bonuses and power-ups and things as well. So the more you save...
The power-ups are a big deal, I would say, in this game.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in all of them, but in this one especially. Because, you know, when you have them, all of a sudden, the shield guys become a lot more, a lot less dangerous, because you can just auto-fire them to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of a sudden your ninja goes from throwing stars to gun, which is a pretty big upgrade, just to have a gun.
It's quite funny, actually, because I don't really think of ninjas as using guns, necessarily. It reminds me of that bit in the first Terrifier when the clown pulls a gun out and just shoots someone, which is really funny. And again, in the Master System version, which I did play the arcade one, because I played it this morning as well. It's hard as hell, I find. Once you get past level one, that thing takes the gloves right off. Once you see Marilyn Monroe, that's it. Like, you are in trouble. But the Master System version changed it up, because, of course, the original arcade, it's a single-hit death deal. You can't take any damage. The Master System, you can take quite a bit of damage. You have about 10 HP and a host of new weapons and things. It really does feel like a loving, sort of careful port of the game, and it's still my preferred version, though the arcade one is still excellent, still very playable. I think it's on, it says here it's on Sega Ages, which is how I'm pretty sure I have it on Switch, but I have this weird idea that it's been delisted, but I could be wrong about that.
The recent Sega purge, I believe, was Steam, not Switch.
Right, okay.
Yeah, the Ages games are all still there, luckily.
That's good, because they're excellent.
Yep, that's the best.
Was it on the 3DS?
I don't think the first one was, no.
Right.
They did Shinobi 2 on DS.
Yeah, they did 3 as well, didn't they? We'll get to that.
That's what I meant. The Japanese 2, the Western 3, yeah.
Right. Sorry, I didn't realize that it was done like that. That's interesting to know, actually.
So, Sugano said it took about 10 months to develop the game, and he actually cited the American Ninjas boom as a reason for the game existing. It's like, I guess... and there's evidence of other games doing this in the 80s. I know that Capcom, when they were making Final Fight, they heard about the ninja boom in America. And like, oh, make sure there's a ninja in this game. Americans love ninjas. So that's why you have Guy in Final Fight, because they decided Americans love ninjas. So that's only 2 years later than this. So
wow.
Japan knew. Japan knew we wanted more ninjas.
And they were right.
Indeed. Sugano even talked about this. This is an amazing... He said... He had the idea of a joystick that would have, instead of a ball at the top of the joystick, the shape would be a ninja star. And so you would actually be sliding the controller like upwards to pretend to throw ninja stars in the bonus stages,
which would be cool.
sounds really cool, but also sounds like it probably would have cost a lot of money to make a custom joystick, so Sega said no thanks, but
a shame, because that would have been very cool. I mean, this was the same year as the Ninja Warriors, I think, 87. So there was definitely something in the water. Taito's extremely good game. You know, we're getting a bit of a ninja boom happening again now, aren't we? With like the Ninja Warriors again and Shadow of the Ninja Reborn from the same developers. They love ninjas now.
Well, ninjas don't go out of style. They're always
cool. True. I want to find out when Ninja Spirit came out so that I can see if this was just the year of ninjas.
I mean, I know Ninja Gaiden
88.
Yeah, Ninja Gaiden in Japan was 88, so it's very close. All these ninja games.
I like it. I love it. More, please.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest here. A ninja is basically a written game design, right there, right? I mean, look at what they can do in theory, what they're out about. You have to make a game out of them. There's no way around it.
They're great as heroes and they're great as villains. Works both ways.
Yep, Sub-Zero and Scorpion. Then Quay versus whatever Scorpion's one is, I forget.
I don't
know. Yellow guy.
Yellow guys, that's one, yeah.
Yeah. One thing you mentioned, Diamond.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned the bonus stage already, and I think the bonus stage for this game is the big set piece of the whole Shinobi game, because I have a feeling that might be what they came up with first when they thought about the joystick doing it looking like that. And it's really impressive, even nowadays, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's what I thought as well, the idea of flicking the thing up to throw into the screen, like, first person. That bonus stage is hard. It's really hard to get a full clear. I very rarely managed it on the Master System, and it's the only way to get ninja magic, so I basically just didn't see most of the ninja magic, because it was just so difficult to get it. But the game was beatable without it, thankfully. Not sure if that's true of the arcade one. But you'd have to be real good.
The arcade one, yeah.
Well, in the arcade's case, it's only for about getting extra lives, and you have to get every single ninja to get the extra life, otherwise you get no bonus whatsoever. So it's a very tall order.
When I played this as a kid, I found the loss when the quite detailed ninja jumps right in front of you, arm outstretched to strike, and it makes this noise. I found that genuinely quite upsetting. Like, I didn't want to fail because I didn't want that to happen. You know?
It's a kind of jump scare, yeah.
It's a bit, you know, like in Operation Wolf, the guy who jumps into the foreground and shoots you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big sprite.
Same effect.
Keep those ninjas away from me, please. Very small sprite ninjas, fine. Big ninjas, no thanks.
But I must shout out here the composer, Yasuhiro Kawakami, who was a new hire for Sega at that point. And he made all the music for Shinobi, and I would say Shinobi has some very good tunes in it, really good. And Kawakami would go on to make music for the arcade version of E-SWAT, Super R-Type, and a few years later, just the god-tier soundtrack for Final Fantasy Mystic Quest. So Kawakami, one of the greats. One of the greats, Yasuhiro Kawakami.
Good music.
It's very catchy, all of that.
Right. And this, like, but even like, that's like the basic one for stage one, but there's another tune for later stages that's just a little more moody, but it's also very pleasant. And the bonus stage is very, very chipper. And the boss theme is a little like quieter. It's more threatening, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's all very well handled, I believe, the music.
The music, they ported it, of course, to the Master System version. It's very, very good there as well. The Master System, I think, has a really nice sound chip. I don't know exactly what it is. I mean, not with the FM add-on, because I never had that, but like this.
It's a PSG.
It's the same as, I want to say it's the same as the Neo Geo Pocket, because it really does sound like that, but there's something quite atmospheric and pleasant about it, really.
Well, if you know what you're doing, there certainly is. Not everybody did, though.
So, there's not much of a story to Shinobi, but I do want to highlight the fact that the hero has a name. The hero's name is Joe Musashi, and he's here to fight a crime syndicate who is called Zeed. Remember that name? It's going to come up again later. Zeed. Mm-hmm. And as we mentioned before, it's basically plays like Rolling Thunder in that you're walking left to right. You can hold up or down on the joystick and jump between planes, or sometimes you'll jump over a fence. There's no doorways. You're not looking for ammo. If you want to attack with a shuriken, you can attack with shuriken. You have unlimited ammo. Don't worry about it. But if you attack someone up close, you automatically use a melee strike, and the game gives you bonus points if you beat a stage without throwing any shuriken. So that's something you can do if you want to get more points.
Wow. Yeah, I can barely beat a stage easy. While I'm throwing the shuriken.
You also have, once per stage, ninja magic. Now, ninja magic is a separate button. It's basically get out of jail free card. You press this button, and something happens. He has a couple different effects that cycle through, but basically the effect is the same. You press the button, he says some what looks like gibberish. I don't think it sounds like Japanese to me. And then something like lightning shoots out, or double shoot out, or little tornadoes fly around, and it will just kill all the regular enemies on screen. If you're fighting a boss, it will damage the boss a couple times, but it won't kill them automatically. But it's good for getting out of trouble. And that also, if you beat a stage and you don't use ninja magic, you get more bonus points. So the game has a lot of tools for you to use, and it rewards you for not using them if you elect not to.
And to spoil a bit already, it also punishes you if you don't use anything, or if you are too good over the time. But we'll get to that soon, I guess.
Now, as we mentioned, the arcade version of Shinobi is basically a one-hit kill game. But there is something unique in that you must be attacked. So if you just walk into a guy who's walking at you, you just sort of bounce off each other and makes it like a little noise. It's like, and it doesn't hurt you at all. But if they kick you, if they stab you, if a guy has a gun and tries to, you know, shoots you, then that's it. That's a hit. Then you die.
Yeah, and that's a great thing because it makes you all, again, play tactically, because sometimes it's even good to bump into enemies so you can disrupt their attacks, especially when you have a gun fighter.
Yeah, you can jump. You can like jump between planes and land on a guy purposely, and you'll knock him back. You know, if you're on a stage that have pits, you can knock guys into pits. But of course, you can get knocked into a pit yourself, so you have to be careful.
Yeah, you better be.
Also, there are enemy ninjas who are a lot harder to deal with because they basically always have their swords out. So if they jump at you and their sword is out, then that's an attack. So you're dead.
I'd say a lot of the time it's actually, though it's not always possible. A lot of the time with the enemy ninjas, it's best to just try and kind of get under them and get away from them, especially if they're on the screen with other enemies, because this game is very good at placing particularly the shooter enemies in a place where you can't crouch under their bullets because you're on an elevated platform of some sort. And it gets, it gets difficult. Even the Master System version, once it introduces like the enemies that are prone, very hard to hit. You can't hit them with shurikens. You have to be close to them. And if you've got one of those, and you've got an enemy ninja, and you've got another shooter in the distance, or someone worse yet who throws that sort of boomerangish weapon that goes back to them, the shield, then you are in you're in deep sludge, to quote a Goofy movie.
Yeah, that's when you should really whip out your ninja magic, because when the screen's really full of ninjas, you are in trouble.
And I don't have any ninja magic because I'm shit.
And the ninjas are very tricky in this game because enemy ninjas can just appear. Like most enemies in the game, you know, they will approach you, or like they'll walk from off screen, or maybe they're stationed off screen and you walk into them. But ninjas can just sort of materialize out of nowhere. And there's at least one stage I can think of where you see the exit, you walk towards the exit, and suddenly like five ninja just appear all around you. And it's like, it's a real oh shit moment. Like,
Yeah, the fact that they can come from behind you at any point almost is, it's brutal. I mean, talking up the difficulty of it, I mean, it's not the hardest game, even the arcade one. It's not unfair, I wouldn't say.
No.
Because there is precision, you have plenty of options. But if you're not prepared to play methodically, you are going to get your ass handed to you, basically. The Master System one is a lot fairer, but it still has its sticking point. So if we're going to talk about the bosses, I'll talk about that then.
Yeah, well, the basic layout of this game is that there are five missions, and each mission usually has three or four stages, and the last stage is just a pure boss battle. And in many of these missions, you will see the boss ahead of time, who will either attack you or maybe threaten you. Some of the bosses are kind of weird. You know, the boss of mission two is basically a helicopter. You fight a helicopter. Okay. The mission three boss is really weird in that it's like a stack of statues you have to destroy, and then behind it is like a big head that like shoots fireballs at you.
It's also really hard, this one.
You have to fight. You have to attack the statues very quickly because they constantly advance at you, and there's like a there's an electric field behind you that automatically kills you. So you have to like hit them really, really quickly.
In the Master System port, that boss is called Mandara. It's that boss in the Master System port is the absolute skill check because. Okay, the way that the weapons work in that version is you can collect upgrades for them, and you go from shuriken to faster rate shuriken to, I think, knives to bombs to the gun. And if you get to that boss and you have anything other than the faster shurikens or maybe the knives, I think it's quite literally impossible. If you have the gun, the fire rate's too slow. It cannot kill them fast enough. There might be a way to do it that I'm not aware of, but I could not get past that unless I had that specific weapon, which means tactical, not collecting hostages. However, you don't know what you're going to get from the hostage until you've collected them, unless you've memorized it. So if you do accidentally upgrade your weapon to something like, God forbid, the really terrible bombs, you are again in deep sludge. To once again quote a goofy movie, a movie is going to keep coming up, I think. But that bit's hard. I mean, I can beat the Master System one, and I have beaten it legit, which I'm quite pleased with because I did it when I was a kid, and it's not a particularly easy game. But that specific boss, my God! And once you've beaten those statues as well, you've still got to destroy the head, and that's not easy either.
No, it moves up and down, it attacks you. Yeah, it's tricky.
And of course, if you die, you lose your weapon, so you're effed, to put it politely.
And you start over, so the statues come back. So yeah.
Oh yes, and again, I want to stress this. I could be wrong, and it could be doable using some tactic I'm not familiar with. But all these years, I've not figured it out. So I'm prepared to put my sort of head in the guillotine here and say, I think that for the more reasonable player, for the sort of layman, it's not possible without those weapons.
I know in the arcade there is a way, because you don't die by just bumping into the statues, they just knock you away like a regular enemy. There's some way to get sort of like get in the statues, and they can bump you out behind mm-hmm. them, and then you just get past them. But yeah. I don't know how to do that reliably.
That on the Master System.
I don't know how to do that reliably.
I tried that on the SMS. I tried that on the MS, and it doesn't work. I couldn't get it to work. If you get hit by them, you will be knocked to the left towards the electric field. And if that field touches you, it's a one-hit kill.
I also tried in the arcade game. Not a chance in the arcade game. I couldn't make it in the arcade game.
Fine.
I think you have to be really good to pull that off. But also, I did a bit of research about the arcade game, about that boss in the arcade game. And from what I found out, it looks like... each statue's hit points depend on how many times you died before. So if you died a couple of times, they will be weaker. If you just played the game on one single life, they will just waste you.
Wow.
Jesus.
And that is...
literal skill check.
I read that. I can't verify that. But holy shit, that is something. That's one decision. And of course, that's poison for speedrunners, I guess. Or poison for people who want to play it on one credit.
Which, by the way, we should also mention, in a sense, you don't have to clear it on one credit, but the game does disable continues during the final mission in the arcade.
Oh, jeez.
So,
a Ninja Gaiden.
If you get to the final mission, or if you get to the last boss and you run out of lives, that's it. Sorry, you have to try again.
I haven't faced the final boss in the arcade version. I imagine it's a lot harder than it is on the Master System, but the way he attacks on the Master System, the Masked Ninja... He's sort of, as you've noted here, he will use attacks that are similar to your own magic, like summoning clones and such. But the way you can defeat him is he's always got a shield around him, so projectiles will do nothing. But if he'll jump around on the screen, and when he lands, the shield will disable briefly, and at that point you can do a melee attack. So you have to get good, but it is fun. It's a fun fight, unlike Mandara, you know? I do like the fights with Kenno in the helicopter, because the helicopter is just... You just feel cool taking down a helicopter by shooting at this tiny little window on the bottom of it and landing those precise hits. I think
also
that,
feels really good when you hit.
Yeah, and it makes a great noise as well. It's like bling, bling. And you really get that sense of I am shattering this windscreen and the person inside this is going to die today.
So, as mentioned, there were a lot of ports for Shinobi. Stuart has been talking a lot about the Master System port, which made a lot of changes, yes. And he's obviously a big fan of that port. I thought it was interesting that there was a NES port by Tengen, which is very clearly based on the Master System port. Like, you look at the graphics, you hear the music, it's very clearly derivative from the Master System version, but that version sucks, so don't play that one.
I remember it has the horrible-looking, almost sort of VGA-ish graphics, doesn't it?
It's ugly, it sounds bad, it's all around really bad. Do not play that NES game, sorry.
Was it licensed? I mean, is it even official?
Tengen, at that point, I don't know. Tengen had some.
Yeah.
Tengen did some official versions, but that might have been unofficial, you know?
Yeah. Did they also do the Fantasy Zone port for the NES as well?
I don't know all the Tengen titles. I know Tengen did do Rolling Thunder in America for NES.
Oh, wow.
But that was official. But it came in the weird cartridge, so it was just kind of like, hey, why is this cartridge so big? And as I also mentioned before, there's the Sega Ages version, which offers the Ages mode. And in Ages mode, it makes the game a little bit easier. It gives Joe one extra hit, so you don't die in one hit, you die in two hits. But because it's a modern port, they also go in and tamper with some stuff that's probably some lawyer told them to cut out. Like, there is an enemy in the game who climbs on a wall, and he's wearing red and blue, so he kind of looks like Spider-Man. And they changed the colors of that enemy so it doesn't look like Spider-Man anymore. Put a pin in that, listeners, because we will not... That's not the last mention of Spider-Man on this episode.
He's sort of an inverted Spider-Man, but he also does what are very clearly Spider-Man poses as well.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, that's just Spider-Man, isn't it?
Also, Stu, you mentioned the posters of Marilyn Monroe, which is an early level.
Yes.
If you play the Sega Ages version, those posters are removed and it's replaced with Altered Beast, which is kind of cute.
It could be argued that Marilyn Monroe herself, due to the sort of corruption in Hollywood, did become something of an altered beast, so it does thematically sort of work.
Stuart, that
I don't mean it. I'm not having a go at her. I'm just having a go at the monster that is the Hollywood system.
I also think they removed these posters entirely in some previous ports. I think there was one on one of these Sonic collections on the PS360 or so, where they put in Shinobi, and they just removed the posters entirely.
I do remember that.
So I think
that,
it's good that we got at least an alternative from M2.
Yeah, this game has been reissued many, many times. Beyond the ports, it's also been reissued in many different formats. It was on Virtual Console. It was on Xbox Live at one point.
Yeah, I remember that. That annoyed me because they used the art from the Master System version with the grid and everything. And I was like, holy shit, they ported the Master System Shinobi to the Xbox. I got to buy this. And I bought it, and it was the friggin' arcade version. I was so disappointed.
So yeah, if you play a reissue of this game, it's kind of a coin toss. What's in there? What's been removed? But the Sega Ages version is still readily available, and that's what I mean as far as like if you want to play this today, the Sega Ages version is very good. But you are playing a slightly edited version. However, Thomas, I know you pointed out this Neo Geo port. The Neo Geo port looks great, and that of course doesn't have any changes. That's just the arcade game.
Well, that's a pretty impressive one, I think. Yeah, I checked that out recently, and. Yeah, they just put it off. I mean, of course, the Neo Geo can do that, but still, I think porting that over is quite the achievement.
Mm.
I think for me, it sort of highlights a bit. It'll come up again later, but it does make me a little bit sad. I mean, there is so much preservation of retro gaming today, like way beyond what you'd expect. Like, I mean, shit like Ernest Evans is coming out again, you know, and I'm delighted that it's coming out again, but it sort of does bum me out a little bit that when games like this do get re-released, it's almost always, what's the best version? Let's put that out. Because sometimes what could be considered a worse version, like the 8-bit port, to me is the definitive version of this game. It's the version I want to play, and I do honestly think it's the best game as far as gameplay goes. But we're never going to see it again, because Sega has some sort of bizarre aversion to making any Master System stuff available anymore since, like, the Wii. It was on the some of it was on the Virtual Console, but only like I think like only like Sonic games maybe. Not that I'm complaining about that. I don't know. It would be nice if someone would put the Spectrum version out on not the Spectrum version, that would be awful. The Master System version out in some form, so people could play it and go, oh yeah, this is a really interesting remix / definitive version of the game. But it's never going to happen, and that makes me a little bit sad.
Oh, well, at least I would say one thing that makes it a bit better is you can really buy the original game pretty cheaply even nowadays.
Oh, yeah. It's dirt cheap, yeah. That's not neither rare nor for some reason desirable, despite the fact it's one of the best Master System games, in my opinion.
Stewardship, all games are good, but only one game is Shinobi on Master System.
It's true. That's the plan for the sequel to the book, is just 400 pages about Shinobi for the Master System. Although I think I already wrote up Shinobi for the Master System in the original book. So, yeah. If you want to read me saying basically the same shit I've already said today, just now, buy my book. There's other things in it too, which I've also probably already said on this podcast. But, you know, you can't bring this podcast with you to the toilet, can you? Oh, shit, you can. It's offering nothing.
Well, you can at least use a podcast on the toilet for other things, so that's something.
It's true, it's true.
And I have to admit, the paper for your book is pleasantly soft.
Oh, Jesus.
Wow. That's harsh.
It is. Harsh but fair.
Yeah, just like Shinobi.
Hey.
To Shadow Dancer, which was a 1989 arcade release, followed by a number of ports, including Sega consoles, but we'll table that for later. We'll get back to that in a second. You may be surprised, of course, why would you make a sequel without the name Shinobi? Why would you call it Shadow Dancer? And one possible reason is that Sugano, who was the main man behind the original Shinobi, was not involved in the sequel at all. He had moved to Sega of America at this time. So that might be one reason why they gave the game a different name, even though it's very clearly a Shinobi-style game. Its gameplay is almost identical. You know, obviously it's got new graphics, new sound, what have you, but it's very clearly, everything looks like Shinobi, but they don't call it Shinobi, they call it Shadow Dancer.
Very odd.
This is also the final arcade release for Shinobi. Only two games came out for the arcades.
That's crazy to think about,
and
isn't it? Like,
we have a quote from Sugano who says, games multiplayer are more likely to generate profit. Even though Shinobi's gameplay was popular, its style was single player. Can't argue with that, unfortunately.
I think that's more or less held to this day. I can't think that there is a Shinobi game that even has multiplayer, like a single one in the whole series. Maybe there is and I don't know, but I don't think so. It's a very solitary activity being a ninja.
I can't think of one. I don't think there is.
Yeah, the only thing I'm going to point out of pure pedantry is I would be surprised if Revenge of Shinobi didn't turn up as like a Mega Play game or something, like one of those Play Choice kind of style Sega arcade machines that they had. But that's pure pedantry, so yeah.
So gameplay-wise, again, this is almost identical to the first Shinobi. You've got ninja stars, you're walking left to right, you're jumping between planes. It's not Joe Musashi, though. The new hero is called Hayate. And the hostages are gone. Instead of hostages, you now are diffusing bombs of some kind. Yeah. But you still get power-ups, so it's basically the same mechanic. It's just instead of a little person-shaped thing, it's a little bomb-shaped thing. And there's bonus stages. Overall, it's a little bit shorter. There's only four missions. And I know the very last fight, you're fighting an enemy outside of, like, a space shuttle that takes off as the battle ends, which is like, I don't know why that happens. I don't know what the story is this time. I guess Zed wants to go to space, or they don't.
It's a strange game for sure. There are a lot of, again, sort of set PC touches that I do enjoy. Like the final boss. I don't think this is just the Master System version, but the final boss in this game, you're fighting this kind of, as the word, like Kunoichi, the sort of female ninja. In front of the space shuttle launch pad. But before the fight, both of you, you know, kneel or crouch, bow to each other. It's very honorable. And, you know, let this be our final battle. And there's something very cool about that, I think. Especially since it's not easy, and none of this game is easy. I think it's even harder than the first one, honestly, even though you've got the dog.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that dog. That is the main new innovation. Dog.
He's a good boy. He's a good boy.
The dog's name is Yamato. This is all written down, by the way. I'm not making this up. His name is Hayate, and the dog's name is Yamato. Yamato walks along behind Hayate. Yamato barks at enemies, and you can send Yamato to attack an enemy, and then Yamato will sort of like growl at them and like latch onto their arm. You know, like when police dogs try to subdue someone, like they grab their arms. So while they're being held by the dog, you can just kill them. But if you don't kill them fast enough, or if you try to send Yamato against a very strong enemy, Yamato will fail, and they will basically injure him so he can't do any more actions. Though there's no blood or anything. Indeed, it's all rendered very cutely because he just turns into a puppy, and that means he's harmless. But
it still breaks your heart whenever you hear that pained yelp, though.
Yeah, the dog makes a noise, and you don't like that. You don't want to hear that noise.
The sort of strategy of that is like, as an example, with similar level design to the original Shinobi, for example, you'll have an enemy behind a crate or something, and they're crouched down, so you can't shoot them without getting into the line of fire. But if you use Yamato, which I believe is a crouch and attack, he will leap over the crate, and he'll wrestle the enemy, which forces them to stand up and puts them in the line of fire. So then you can stand up and take them out safely. So there is strategy there. As I mentioned, I think they've amped up the difficulty even more, especially the fact that with the sort of air quotes superior graphics, the graphics are a lot busier and harder to read, I think, in places. Like the airport level, there's just stuff everywhere all the time. That's like
the
first
also
stage.
Of course, the sprites are really large this time. It also makes it a bit more fuzzy all around.
Yeah, they're big sprites,
But I have to say I think myself, it feels worse than the original Shinobi. It just feels a little bit more loose and, sorry for saying that, a bit more janky as well. It's just not as tight as the original game was, you know?
Yeah, for me, it's... again, we're going to get to it, obviously, because you've alluded to it already, Diamond, but for me, I'm glad it exists because it means that the home versions exist, which for me are basically overall great, much better games, using the same sort of mechanics. I don't hate this by any means. I think it's fun. I think the boss fights are unbelievably unfair in places because so many of them have quasi sort of timed elements to them. There's at least two bosses that are essentially advancing walls of death that you've got to hit very precisely when they've got their shield down and when their weak spot is in a certain position. And the set pieces are cool and exciting, but good luck getting past the second boss is all I'm going to say.
Yeah, so when it came time, and obviously, again, like Shinobi, Shadow Dancer was ported to all sorts of devices and home computers, but when it came time for Sega to port it to their own consoles, they took a slightly different approach. First of all, they changed the new name. So the home ports from Sega are called Shadow Dancer, The Secret of Shinobi. So they put the Shinobi back in there to let you know this is a Shinobi game.
Hey, it's Shinobi, guys. Come on. You like Shinobi. And we do like Shinobi, so good for them. Good for them. Yeah, I'm much more familiar with these versions. I don't want to talk people's ears off. Should I talk about the SMS version just for a bit?
Go ahead. Start with that one first.
The Master System version is actually remarkable for several reasons, and not all of them are good. It's close to the arcade game. It has the same level archetypes, but it's a cut down. There are only, I think, four levels in the whole game, plus bosses. And the levels are not long, and the levels are not particularly difficult, because there are fewer enemies on the screen. There's only, like, two max, I think. Because in this game, for a Master System game, it has some... I'm going to just swear, some fucking remarkable sprites. Like, they are really impressive. The animation is really good. The sprites are really big, and the sprite flicker is surprisingly limited. It's there, but it's not as crippling as you'd expect. And I think that's because there are only ever about two things on the screen ever at once. The levels are very flat. There's one particular level in a sewer that is effectively a straight line. But the fact that these are sprites, big sprites, and they're not background. I don't know exactly how it works, but I know that a lot of big things you see on the Master System are actually part of the background. So they're not really technically sprites. They're not moving. But These are, and it's very impressive. I'm going to stop saying remarkable. I've said it like 10 times. I need to get a thesaurus. And it's got a friggin' dog. They got rid of the dog. Like, I mean, he's kind of there, but he's not with you. And that's like the fun of, a lot of the fun
of it. Yeah. In order to reduce the number of objects on screen, Yamato is not seen. You can still summon him and you can still use him in certain situations, but Yamato is not walking behind you the entire time, which makes the game a lot less visually fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's also some sampled speech in this game, which on the Master System is not common. Not common at all. When you use ninja magic, for example. I mean, it sounds awful, but it's there.
Yeah, you know, it's a case. It's one of these cases where, yes, it's cool they pulled it somewhat off, but maybe they should have gone of a different approach for this port.
Yeah, it's one of those, they spent too much time, like so much time wondering if they could, that they never considered whether they should, or whatever the quote is from that.
Pretty much
fantastic
that, yeah.
Giant Jurassic Park movie, yeah. Sega found a way, sort of.
We should mention, though, this is a 1991 release, so it's kind of late for Master System.
Yes.
And this port was not released in America or Japan, so...
PAL only, PAL Massive represent.
This is kind of, we're going kind of out of order here, and we'll explain why. Before that game came out in 1990, they released a Genesis Mega Drive version called Shadow Dancer Secret of Shinobi. But get this, it's not a port of the arcade game. It's actually an original game.
It is.
And what a game. It's
so good. Yeah.
The levels are different. The sprites are all different. The music is totally different. It's now set in 1997 New York City, and something terrible has happened. Like, the city's on fire, and I feel like this decision to make this sort of, like, some sort of near-future game gives the entire adventure a much stronger identity. The music, shout-out to Keisuke Tsukahara. Keisuke Tsukahara. Sorry, it's a hard name to say. Great FM synth sounds, like, awesome sound effects. Really cool. Rieko Kodama, graphic design, hell yeah. We love Rieko Kodama on this podcast.
Yeah, on this podcast we stan Rieko Kodama. Mm.
The bonus stages have been rejiggered so that instead of doing a first-person ninja shooting, your ninja is now falling through the sky, and the ninja are, like, attacking from beneath, and you have to shoot the ninja as you're falling. Hitting them. It's really cool.
It is completely unhinged. You know that bit in that movie, The Other Guys, when The Rock and Samuel L. Jackson just jump off? It reminds me of that a little bit. It is absolutely unhinged. You're falling between skyscrapers, furiously throwing ninja stars that move even faster than you while you're falling, and then you just land on your feet because you're like some kind of cat. Well, I guess you're a ninja. a Neko ninja. That's a thing, right? From... what was it? That bunny. Usagi Yojimbo, that's it. You're a Neko Ninja.
But it's also more forgiving, because if you beat the bonus stage and you get all the ninjas, you get 3 extra lives.
Easier said than done. Yeah, not as hard as the original.
Oh, it is very easy. You can cheese that stage very easily. You just go all the way to the left, because when the ninjas turn around, right, they stay a little bit longer on the side, and then you can hit them.
Yeah. If you head over to... It's the same in the... sorry, Thomas, come on. I don't mean to talk over you.
No, if you stay on the left, then you will usually always get all 50 of them.
You've reminded me of something I really want to mention about the Master System one, because I found it out this morning and I was furious. They have ported the different special stages from the arcade version, including the one where you're throwing... the ninjas are shuffling along on the side skyscraper coming towards you. It's like the one from the original Shinobi, but a little bit different, right?
Yes.
Now, I have tested this extensively using the rewind function on the emulator. It's rigged. Can't win.
You can't
win. It's rigged. The final ninja, no matter what I did, no matter where I was positioned, I tried it over and over again, and the stars just went through the guy. It's rigged. You can't win it. It's bullshit. I'm furious.
Stuart, I tell you what. Next time when you go to Japan, you join us, then we go to Sega and we just beat the guys up, all right?
Or we could just throw ninja stars at them while they try and shuffle down Sega Tower.
Diamond, is that okay in Japan, or would that be frowned upon?
I really don't think you should be throwing anything at any skyscrapers. I gotta be honest.
The last guy who would be coming out of Sega Towers, I'd be throwing ninja stars at him, and they'd pass right through him. He'd jump down to cut my head off, and my last thought would be, oh, it was real, so I'm not upset anymore. And then my head would go flying across, roll into a manhole or something, and that would be the end of me, and that would be the end that I've always wanted.
That's how it's going to go down, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Yamato's back. Yamato's on screen the entire time. You can summon Yamato. You do all the, you know, all the Yamato stuff is there. I also love that when you have a boss fight, there's always like a bolt of lightning that comes in and like the boss like appears magically. It's a really cool effect.
It's so cool. The big bosses, the set piece feel is back, but here it's up to 11. I mean, you mentioned the burning city at the beginning, like the manholes that will explode upwards with this plumes of fire. Yep. Falling masonry everywhere. And again, it's hard, but I think it's a lot less hard and a lot more fair. I love the music, as you've mentioned, but I also love the sound effects, like when you get hit and it goes like, da-da-da-da-da, and like freezes like dramatically. Yamato is used in a more precise way because you have to hold the B button to charge him up. It only takes a second, but you hold that release and he'll attack. And if you attack at the wrong time, again, he'll turn into a puppy, but after a while, he will return to full size. He will undergrow a growth spurt and become a big good boy again. So yeah, tremendous game this. Really, 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 really good. One of the best ones in the series, and a little bit overlooked, I think, compared to what's coming.
Yeah.
Because I like this better than the next one. I'm just holding my hands up, but I really do.
Oh boy.
But
yeah, I mean, I
think more people should play it.
I think the arcade game felt a bit janky, and this one is the exact opposite of that. It feels incredibly tight and incredibly precise to play. It's amazing.
It took me a long time to play this because they did back in the PS2 and PSP days, the Sega Mega Drive / Genesis collection came out by Backbone, and for absolutely no reason whatsoever that I can fathom, it wasn't in the UK version or the PAL version.
Our fault. That's Germany.
God damn it, Germany. Is there anything you won't ruin?
Right? We are terrible. But yeah, the thing is, Shadow Dancer was banned in Germany back in the day. Only the Mega Drive game, as far as I know. And the reason why, I can't say, to be honest. You could, of
dog
course,
violence.
Interpret... The dog might be a reason, of course, because you can stick your dog enemies. But on the other hand, if you hit an enemy, there is an effect when you hit them that you could mistake for blood. I don't think it's supposed to be blood, but you could. So, for whatever reason, they banned this one. All the others were fine, but this one was banned until, I think, not too long ago. I think they got it from the Index when they did another collection, where they finally put it on, the one that was on Switch and on PS4 and so on.
That is astonishing to me. I mean, it's a shame.
That's on
us. I mean, I don't mean it what I say about Germany. I love Germany. And one day I will go to Germany and we'll play golf or something. But, yeah, it's a shame because it took me a long time to get around to that. But because of that, it makes it more special in a weird way. You know, this game was one of the later Mega Drive classics that I got to play. It's on the Mega Drive Mini 2 as well, but I don't know how many people own a Mega Drive Mini 2 or whether you can still get the Mega Drive Mini 2, because that thing always felt very niche even at the time.
It was the niche of the niche, yeah. but I'm a bit like you in that regard, you know, because for me, it was the first Shinobi game I've ever played.
Oh, wow, really? Yeah, so that's a good start.
Absolutely, yeah. I got that from my American aunt because, as I said, banned in Germany. So for the good stuff, you have to look elsewhere. And that first impression was really something. I was really into that. And of course, after that, I had to get all the other ones I could get my hands on.
That's a little bit like how my first live wrestling show was Kazuchika Okada versus Minoru Suzuki. It's ruined. Like, it's like I've seen the best first. It's crazy. Royal Quest, my friends. Royal Quest at the Copper Box Arena. What a great show. Nothing to do with Shinobi whatsoever, but there you go.
There is one small bummer, though. If you play one of the modern reissues of this game, the title screen will look a little funny because in the original title screen, the ninja is standing in front of what's obviously supposed to be New York City, and there are two twin towers behind him. And if you play a modern version, they've edited that title screen graphic to make the two towers into one big tower, and it looks conspicuous and stupid. And it's just like, what are you doing here? What, we can't even look at Twin Towers anymore? And come on. It's just dumb.
I do find that odd. I mean, we don't want to get into that, obviously, but I do find that a little bit just kind of like, those things existed, you know? Everyone knows that they existed. And I do think it's a very strange thing to edit them out. Like,
it's so
maybe
conspicuous,
at the time, I get it.
It's so conspicuous, like, you know?
Around when it happened, like, I sort of get that they were editing things like The Simpsons and that Spider-Man trailer got pulled. But, yeah. Like, now, everyone knows it's an old game. The context it's being presented in is a retro compilation of some sort. No one is going to look at that and go, that's outrageously offensive. I don't get it. I really don't. I'm sympathetic if people are upset by it. I really am. I can see why, because it was so seismic and horrible if you were there. And even if you weren't there, it was horrible. Everyone remembers where they were. But I don't think anyone was going to look at Shadow Dancer and just go like, 9/11, yeah, you know. I mean, if they're not going to take out the city that's been completely destroyed, that's, I don't know, I don't get it.
It's weird.
But yes, it is a little curious because this is a 1990 game based on a 1989 arcade game, but this was the second Shinobi game to come to the Mega Drive Genesis, because later in 1989, we got an actual Shinobi sequel called The Revenge of Shinobi, or in Japan, The Super Shinobi.
Something funny about a Mega Drive game being called Super something, that you know, that's a very SNES thing to do, isn't it?
I think that was the Japanese title, and they did not use that title in America for sure. So,
right, by the way, I read the interview with Oba, with the planner and coordinator of the game, and what I love what he said is, we used to put the super prefix on many games, but we just for shits and giggles we put in the super because we could. These were the times.
Well, Japan loves this definitive article, these. They put the on everything. You know, like you go to the convenience store and get like the chocolate or the coffee. Like they do it all the time. So.
Oh, wow. I got to try this. I mean, I think this is the, I think Revenge of the Shinobi, I think this may be the game most people think of when they think of Shinobi, because it was so everywhere and widespread and available so frequently and so often repackaged, which we'll get to once we've discussed the actual content of the game. I'm getting ahead of myself again.
It's a weird timeline thing. So because the Revenge of Shinobi was such a, you know, was an early release, first of all, it was an early release in the lifespan of the Mega Drive Genesis. So a lot of, and I had it, a lot of my friends had it, a lot of us played it. So because this one came first, by the time the Shinobi Shadow Dancer came out, I was like, oh, wait, this isn't like Revenge of Shinobi. This is like the old arcade game. Like, so in my mind, I was like, this feels like a step backwards. Now, obviously, viewed today, I think all these games have their own merits. But at the time, coming from this game, I thought Shadow Dancer was like, oh, this is weird. We're going back to that style of game? Okay. Well, I like the dog, though. So it's a little confusing. But yeah, this is 1989 in all territories. But yeah, it did very, very well. It was also ported to Xbox Live, PlayStation Network. It was on, this is kind of strange, it was on the Mega Drive Mini in Japan, but then it was on the international Mega Drive Mini 2, along with the Shadow Dancer game. So
I guess because it was a copious oversight, or a conspicuous oversight, not copious. It was both.
Oh, well, what they did.
It was copiously conspicuous.
I think I can explain that a little bit, because what they did for the Mega Drive Mini 1, they tried to have usually one game from a series on there, and for the West, they decided to do Shinobi 3, which they thought was the more modern one. So I guess that's why we lost it in the West. But I would like to give a bit of context for the release of Super Shinobi, because when you look at the Mega Drive release history, right? Until this game, we had mostly arcade ports or rather shitty exclusive developments. And
yeah, this had to be one of the early standouts, like, for sure.
I think it was the big early standout, because I think this is the game that really showed, okay, the Mega Drive can do amazing graphics, can sound great, and it can at the same time deliver a long, complex home console experience.
Yeah.
Because nothing before did that. I would say maybe Mystic Defender did. This was, I think, a tiny bit earlier.
Is this pre-Sonic? This is pre-Sonic,
oh, yeah.
It?
Absolutely, yes, it yeah. Yeah, yeah. Long pre-Sonic. This was, I think, the biggest game on the system before Sonic came along. And otherwise, I mean, we had stuff like, we had, of course, Golden Axe is amazing.
Yeah.
Ghosts and Ghosts is amazing and stuff like that. But it's arcade ports, right? So they have this arcade philosophy behind them. And this one is a really, it's a long, complex home console game that you really play for a long time to finish. And that doesn't have this this arcade idea of you die every couple of minutes so you can put in another coin.
I think this game is more like, it retains the, to some extent, the different planes that you jump between, although the focus on those
absolutely,
is more
yeah.
limited, but it's more to me like an expansion of the later stages of the original Shinobi, because you get more sprawling stages, more sort of quasi-puzzle stages. And of course, the fact you have a life bar now, makes it feel to me like it's a sequel to the Master System game rather than, the arcade one in a sense.
Yeah.
This was also a very widespread game. I'm not sure if these were a thing in the US and Japan. They probably were. But the Mega Games compilations, where they would include three different games on a pack and more later, Mega Games 2 was probably the most widespread one I saw, and it had this, Golden Axe and Streets of Rage. Now, that's a banger of a cartridge right
there. That's a good compilation, like, yeah.
And I think that was a pack-in with a lot of places as well, because everyone had that. And that is where I first played this game and was absolutely destroyed by it, because it's really quite difficult. The change to the fact that you've now got limited shurikens. I mean, they're everywhere, but they are limited unless you use the code to get unlimited, which I usually do because I'm crap.
It's also quite easy to do that.
It is. And it's really cool and interesting as well. It's like, set the sound test to shuriken, go to set your shurikens to zero, and then I think hold right, and the zeros will merge and form an infinity sign. How cool is that?
Very cute. Very, very, very cute flex they didn't have to do, but they did anyway.
This game is full of stuff like that. It's an excellent game.
The game is a giant flex.
Yeah. It's not my favorite, because I think some of the level design is a bit, I think it's really hard in a frustrating way when you've got things like spikes or the sharp bamboo reeds all over the place, and you've got some sort of erratic level design for me, but it's still excellent. Like, it would be insane for me to say it was bad, because it's definitely not. And the music is incredible in this game.
If I may chime in here, as I said, my first game was Shadow Dancer, and right after I played that game, I got the money I had and imported. I got an import copy of Super Shinobi, because I was really into it. And the first time I played it was a bit, this is weird. It's a bit slower. It's a bit smaller. But over time, it really grew on me. And I would say nowadays, this is actually one of the best action games ever made for any console period. At least that's my opinion.
I mean, I think that my issues with it are based solely, they're skill issues, you know, as they would say now in the YouTube comments, because things like the somersault jump that you do, which is not optional, you have to do it.
It's very important.
I think pulling that thing off, I find a little bit too finicky.
You have to get the timing really well down.
Yeah, and that's not a knock on the game. It's a knock on me. Like, what I'm saying here is I'm not good enough at Super Shinobi. Whereas when we get, if it might not be in this episode, but things like Shinobi 3, I think they refined it just about enough. Whereas this, to me, is a little bit dated from the sort of slow movement and stuff. But
I think it's the point of the game, in a way.
The amount of expansion is, it's very methodical, like almost all the Shinobi games. They're not high, I wouldn't say they were high octane action games. There is a lot of action, but you are looking at what's happening. You are reasoning how to approach these things. I don't think you're timed or anything, or if you are, it's plenty.
There's no time limit on these.
You need to get good. And of course, in the later game, you can block projectiles as well, which also gives you a bit more breathing space. Whereas in this, that you're going to get sort of not spammed, but you're never not in danger.
You can block if you have the power up, but only then.
Oh, you can. Okay.
I'm glad we all love this game, but let's set some ground here, just explain who made this game and why we enjoy it so much. So,
yep.
The credited planner coordinator this time is Noriyoshi Oba, and there was a interview translated by Shmuplations where he outlined a lot of details about making this game. And as we've gushed already, this is a very showcasey game for the Mega Drive Genesis, and that's on purpose. You know, they made an effort to use as much of the console as they possibly could to make the game look and sound incredible. And I think they did their job. I think they did a job wonderfully. I'm pretty sure this is the first game I owned for the Genesis that wasn't an arcade port. I'm pretty sure. You know, I know I got mine with a bunch of arcade games. I'm pretty sure this is the first one I bought. Like, okay, this is an original Genesis game, and oh, I love this. This is for me. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a system seller. Absolutely.
I believe
seller.
So.
Like, there really was nothing else like it. And the fact it's not an arcade port, as mentioned, the only place you're going to play this is on the Mega Drive. You can't go and just throw a quarter into an arcade machine and have a go at it. Big, big game for them. Big game. Which is something that I feel maybe gets overlooked a fair amount. And I mean, nobody overlooks this game, but people may overlook the impact it had, I'd say.
And obviously, because it's designed for home console, they thought about it. They wanted to make it a longer game. It is indeed a much longer game. I think there are seven or eight total.
Yep.
Like worlds.
It's eight stages. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And each one has
multiple areas per biome as well. Yeah.
You start off with a life bar. It grows as you play. If you get high scores, you get longer life. Now, since you have a life bar, that means enemies now hurt you on contact. So you can't do the old like bump off enemies. You know, that costs life. There's plenty of pits. There's lava. There's this bottomless things. There is no saving. There's no passwords. So, unfortunately, you can't, you know, when you start off, you start at the beginning. You have to do that all the time. The bonus stages did not make it. Oba said he wanted to include bonus stages, but in the end, they couldn't fit them in the memory. So,
I'm not surprised.
They had a thought for it, but they couldn't make it work.
Oh, by the way, I would like to add one tiny bit of information, because I mentioned Oba a couple of times. Oba is also the guy who made a couple of games later on, like Skies of Arcadia and so on. And his, you know, back in the Dreamcast days when Sega had all these different studios with their individual names, right? There was Overworks, and Overworks was based on the name Oba. So in Japanese, of course, it's the same pretty much. So it was right. Overworks in a way.
That's cute.
So that's maybe what his biggest legacy in a way nowadays.
And based on this, it seems like he certainly does.
I mean, he's a giant in terms of game design, I think. He did a ton of amazing games.
Not enough people put respect on that name, I would say.
I tried to get him for an interview once, but he left Sega at that point already, and yeah, he's not easy to track down, I guess, nowadays.
So, according to Oba, this game takes place 3 years after the first game. It is still Joe Musashi, even though he looks totally different. He's now dressed in all white. The first game happened, so Zed is dead, but now we're fighting Neo Zed. They're back, and they're new, so Neo.
Yay!
The hostages are gone. Don't worry about hostages anymore. Instead, every level just has these little crates. These little crates are everywhere, and you have to find the crates and break them open, and you can get more shuriken or power-ups or even extra lives or even bonus magic, although those are obviously very rare. Health refills.
Blown up.
Bit of energy.
Bomb.
Bombs? It's right. You can find a bomb, the bomb just blows up.
Yeah, the bombs, they have a timer bit. If you step on them, the timer counts down faster. I think you have to pay attention to what you're doing, which is... I'm not crazy about that. I feel like power-ups should be power-ups, but that's just me being a bit whingy.
They're not random. Like they're always fixed, so if you play the game enough, you know exactly where everything is.
I think it would have been cool if the bombs, maybe they do, if they always also hurt the enemies, so they had some kind of utility, but it's just a very minor complaint.
They don't.
It's a very minor complaint, really.
Indeed, if you know where the secrets are, there's a couple spaces where you can actually stock up on extra lives. I know there's one in the factory stage where it's actually a double one-up, because in order to get the one-up, you're basically going to fall into a pit and die, but it's a double one-up. So if you keep doing that over and over again, you will actually accrue lives even though you're dying each time, which is cute.
Yeah, there's quite a few games on the Mega Drive and other formats where they have things like that in there, like little loops where you can stack up lives, and I'm grateful for them.
Yeah, the same thing happens in the plane stage, because the plane stage, that is also, I think, a bit of the skill check of the game, because they have doors that open and close. If you are in front of a door when it opens, you are sucked out, life is instantly gone. That's really hard. But also in that stage, there's a double one-up hidden. So even if you die a ton of times, you still get stronger all the time. And
all the lives in the world won't help you with some of this game, but yeah.
Well, they actually do, because want to go through the magic system quickly?
Yeah.
Because lives heavily factor into that.
Yeah, the magic is back, and what's different this time is that you have four different spells to choose from, and each one has a different effect. So up until this point, the magic has basically been a single... you push the button, you kill everything on screen, that's the end of the story. But now you have magic that you use strategically, and again, the basic is you get one spell per stage. If you don't use it, get bonus points. But there are occasionally you find extra magic, which is very rare, but you can find it, and that can play into your strategy if you find extra magic spells. But the four spells are very simple. One of them is you create fire that just damages everything on screen. It's very standard. The lightning spell gives you a shield that takes up to 5 hits, can be very useful against certain bosses that sort of, you know, are in your face.
Mm-hmm.
There's a jump magic, which is, again, if you're in certain stages that actually have a lot of tricky jumps, or there's one stage that is almost entirely vertical, if you cast the super jump magic, you can clear that stage in like 3 seconds. You just jump all through to the top. It's easy. And most interesting, but also most dangerous, is the Mijin spell. And in the Mijin spell, you literally blow yourself up.
Mm.
And exploding yourself will damage or kill every regular enemy, and it will deal a lot of damage to any bosses. But it is literally trading a life for, you know, for progress.
Oh, so if you've managed to rack up enough lives, you could choose some of the bosses
Absolutely.
That you're having the most trouble
exactly.
with.
Exactly, and yeah, that's what I was going okay. for.
See, I didn't know that. That transforms my opinion of this game. That's really cool.
It counts as a death, since you normally have one magic. That means you can cast it again and again and again, as long as you have lives. If you do the,
wow.
if you cast this magic and you have no lives left, it's game over. Also, you
at least you went out with a bang. Yeah.
In casting it, you respawn in the same place, so it's also a kind of thing like, oh, geez, I've been playing the stage for 10 minutes. I don't know where the exit is. I'm low on life. I could kill myself and just get a fresh bar of life and keep going. That's strategy if you want to take it.
That's so interesting. I honestly had no idea about this. That's so cool. That really rebalances it, like, hugely. Wow.
It's
real-time mind changes.
It is a major strategic move, especially late in the game against some of the late bosses. You might really contemplate using this strategy because it's very powerful. Also, to go along with the new life bar and the longer and the bigger overall game, like, these levels can be pretty long. Some of them are, you don't always know the way forward. You might have to go up or down. You might have to look for the exit. The penultimate stage, right before the last boss, is a literal labyrinth with lots of doors, like
Violet.
Dozens of doors.
Horrible
it's
level.
Really hard.
That is tough.
Really, really rough, yeah. I mean, I have played this game legit, but I remember playing it the first time through on the PSP. I mean, the first time properly on the PSP. I'd played it before on a Mega Drive, but because that has save states, I would use them to sort of progress through this maze without losing my time. And even doing that, it was hard. Like, you really need to know where you're going in that stage, because the enemies come back and the enemies are tough. Like, that is not an easy level. That is like the climax of the game, I would say, in terms of the sheer level of difficulty it's throwing at you. But even that I wouldn't call overtly unfair or anything.
It also has a unique background tune, which is, like, total chaos. It's really nerve-wracking music, so...
Yep. But generally, the last two balls are really, really tough. Until then, it's doable. After what, you really have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you have the tools to deal with it. Like, we haven't yet mentioned the double jump and then throw out, like, a fan of shurikens. Like in Contra 3, when you hold the shoulder buttons and jump and fire, you know, and you shoot both your guns in all directions. It's a bit like that. It's like a last ditch. I'm going to throw, what, like 10 shurikens? Maybe slightly fewer than
eight.
That? Oh, it's 8, sorry. You've written it down on the notes, so I'm not paying attention. But yeah, 8 shurikens, like, it's a lot of shurikens. Like, that's, at any given time, that's almost like 10% of what you're carrying, and it's going to go down if you keep spamming it. So you really need to get good. But now that I know about this self-destruct magic, that adds a whole new layer to the difficulty, because it's that choice of, like, well, I'm near the end of the stage, maybe. I don't want to lose my progress, so I'll spend a life and continue here. I think that's great.
Minds were blown today, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Minds have been self-destructed.
So let's talk about bosses, because I feel like a lot of the boss battles in this game are very creative, and some of them are just really just out there. I mean, my personal favorite is the brain in the jar in the airplane. You fight a brain in a jar.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah, Neo Zed are on some crazy shit this time, I'll tell you. I mean, we, the elephant in the room, obviously, is the enormous amount of copyright infringement in this game.
Yeah, yeah.
For some bosses, yeah.
It's not just bosses, but there are several bosses that look a lot like popular characters. And Oba kind of points the finger partly at himself. He says that he drew sketches, and he wanted them to be, like, ideas for the art department. But apparently they took his, like, his ideas literally. So, you know, there's a... Stage 7 is basically Godzilla. It looks a lot like Godzilla, you know. Oba has an explanation pointing out how it's not Godzilla, but if you look at it, it looks a lot like Godzilla.
Just without the spikes on the back. Otherwise,
right.
It's a white Godzilla, basically, yeah.
It looks like Godzilla, but due to international copyright laws, yes, it's
exactly.
Not.
It's not.
Sorry, I can't. I had to reference the funniest movie of all time, Austin Powers' Goldmember.
I know what the scene you're talking about. I know what it is. That's a pre-Heroes Masioka, by the way. The guy who was in Heroes before they did Heroes.
Well, I don't blame you.
There's a boss who just looks exactly like the Terminator. He even blows up and he's a robot inside. There's a rather confusing boss sequence where you fight an obvious clone of Spider-Man, complete with webs, who then leaves, and then Batman appears.
It's Amalgam Comics years early.
Yeah, and this actually depends on the version of the game, because the original version of the game, like at launch, I guess, just had all these copyrighted characters with no notes whatsoever. And then depending on the revision of the game, they either edited out the characters or at some point, in the case of Spider-Man, it's interesting, because Sega was working on Spider-Man games at the time, I think in the base version, he's there unauthorized. In the second version, he gets a credit, so you know it's Spider-Man. And in the modern games, when you play today, it's not Spider-Man, so they change his colors. But he still acts like Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man just, like, I think these New Year's Eve guys are on the level. I'm going to join up with them. It's very odd, no matter what. You know, it's really, really odd. There's something utterly charming about the complete lack of giving a shit for copyright, though. I love it. Just like, this boss is Rambo. This boss is just Batman. I love Batman. Let's put him in it. I think there's something absolutely charming about that.
Yeah, the Batman's interesting because... He was paired with the Spider-Man, so in the very original version, Spider-Man transforms into Batman, but then they change it and made Spider-Man leave, so the Batman appears. And if you play today, it doesn't look like Batman at all, it's more of a Man-Bat, it's more monstrous. So,
well, Man-Bat's also a character from Batman, though.
I'm just saying, it's a monster that looks like a bat instead of a, you know what I mean? It's yay.
Yeah, I got you, yeah.
I thought of Devilman when I saw him in the new port.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Godzilla's a skeleton now, so it didn't look like Godzilla anymore. There's even...
And they shaved Rambo.
They shaved Rambo's head. Even the title screen. If you play this game, it's got an incredible title screen where it's got a very large image of a ninja who blocks some throwing stars with his sword. And
so cool.
The title screen is very clearly based on an old Sonny Chiba, I think it was a TV show, where he played a ninja. And... if you play a modern version, they've actually removed that image. And I've read somewhere that it might be the eyes of an M2 employee because they handled the port, but...
It is, yeah.
It's unfortunate because his eyes are very distinctive, and I don't know why they would remove that. I don't think Sonny Chiba is going to sue anybody over his eyes, especially now that he's dead. But, yeah, the new versions don't have that anymore.
The estate of Sonny Chiba will probably step in.
Yeah, but on the other hand, now it's M2's Tsuyoshi Matsuoka who is staring at the player.
You know who it is, okay.
Yeah, he was the guy who did much of the virtual console stuff for M2 back then. Yeah, but he's not as intent as Onitiba was, I'm afraid.
No, no, he doesn't have the, he does not have the intensity. It, the ninja looks like he's very tired.
Not the eyebrows.
I mean, he would be, wouldn't he? Like,
but it's the start of the game. It's the title screen. We need more energy.
He lacks the Sonichiba angry eyebrows.
Yeah.
More like the relax of Shinobi. How about that?
Well, what's not relaxing, the incredible soundtrack by Yuzo Koshiro.
Ooh.
We have to mention his name.
Oof, what a
we
soundtrack.
Have to mention his name. He is
yep.
He is credited on the title screen, which was very rare. Apparently that idea came from his mom. His mom said you should get your credit on the title screen. So he fought for that.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, if I may butt in quickly, because that is after he left Falcom and there were a bit of shenanigans about soundtrack and copyright and name rights and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is his first work for Sega, I believe, so...
Just coming in for Sega, like, making the track Terrible Beat, which is misnamed because it's actually an incredibly good beat. I think that Terrible Beat is one of the iconic Mega Drive tunes. Like, I could listen to that anytime.
Absolutely.
It's just fantastic. It's like fucking Judas Priest or something. It's so good.
Whenever my phone has a ringtone, it is Terrible Beat. I put it on there.
Excellent.
Myself.
Great choice.
And anytime anyone phones you, everyone around you is like, that's the one, however cool.
My dream is to one day interview Yuzo Koshiro because I will set it up in advance and I will have someone call me so that his music interrupts her interview.
I'll call you, Diamond.
I'm going to make that happen someday.
We have to try if we can arrange something next year in September when me and John are in Japan again.
I came close. Because Yuzo Koshiro works a lot with 8-4, and he's also working on that new Mega Drive game, Earthion, I think is the name.
Yep.
So he's still active. I came really close to meeting him, I think, at TGS a couple years ago, but he was talking to someone else. I missed it. But I'm going to meet him. I'm going to arrange it. I'm going to make it happen.
We will get that done. You know, John and I were at his place in 2023 to talk about Earthion and other stuff.
I mean, he's already a hero to me for things like this and, you know, ActRaiser. But ready your bingo cards, Retronauts listeners, but he also did music for Unigami Kone, so what can I say, you know?
He did.
Oh, my.
He did indeed. We have some good quotes here from Oba. Oba said, all I asked him to do was not make music sound like traditional Japanese game. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Yep, certainly.
And Oba loved his work so much, he asked him to come back the next year when he made Streets of Rage. So the music in this game absolutely led Koshiro to make the music for Streets of Rage. And I feel like if any game has a better reputation than this, it is probably Streets of Rage. So if you love Streets of Rage, you can thank Revenge of Shinobi, because that's what happened.
Yeah, and if you listen to the music from Shinobi nowadays, you can really see how it's already going in that direction we have later with Streets of Rage 1 and 2. So he is already going for that club sound, for the electrical stuff in some stages. Not all of them, but some of them are really clear predecessors to his Streets of Rage music.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anything else on Revenge of Shinobi?
One very important thing, yeah. We should maybe talk about the ending of the game and the final boss battle.
Because, oh, God, I almost forgot. Yes.
They went so far to give this game two different ending scenes, depending on how you beat the boss.
Yes, the last boss is actually quite challenging.
Yep. If I may explain quickly, so the final boss
Go
is
ahead.
After that long labyrinth, which is really tough, really tiring. You get to this room with this, I would say he's Kabuki looking, right? With that, with the hair and everything.
Yeah.
Would you agree to that?
Yeah, officially he's the ninja master, but yes, he's got the giant wig that Kabuki performers sometimes wear, and he swings it around. And as long as he's swinging the hair around, you can't hit him. He can hurt you, but you can't hit him. So you have to wait for a window to hit him.
His pattern is pretty simple, I would say. He's not too hard as a boss. But on the other hand, in the background, you see your girlfriend, Naoko, in the background. And this huge-ass rock is coming slowly down to crush her. So you have to beat the guy before your girlfriend is crushed. So if you manage that, you get the good ending. If she is crushed while you fight the boss, you get the bad ending.
Interestingly enough, they, of course, had a thing going on with Spider-Man at this point, and the Mega Drive Spider-Man game actually has a very similar finale where Mary Jane is being lowered into like some kind of horrible acid pit or something, so you have to keep webbing the chain that she's hanging from so it won't go down while you're fighting Kingpin. That's not that different from this.
It isn't. Because, you know, I found this out when I did research for this podcast. I had no idea this was possible. You can let the rock move up a little bit again if you hit the walls on the left and the right side, I think.
There's a small hole.
So that's something I did not know before that. Yeah. There's a hole in the wall, exactly.
There's a hole in the wall that you can shoot a shuriken into, and if you throw it in there, then it makes a sound, and it basically, I believe it stops the wall for like a second or two. So while you're fighting...
It's something, at least.
While you're fighting, unless you have a very good strategy and you don't need to worry about it, if you basically want to hop up there sometimes and throw some throwing stars into the hole to try and slow down the descent. It has to be throwing stars. So if you run out of throwing stars, then you're in big trouble.
She's in big trouble, more like.
But you're in trouble then anyway. But, okay, at least Sega was playing nice in this case, because if you know what you're doing, you can, I wouldn't say cheese the boss, but you get some the upper hand, because right before the door to the final boss, you can find a power-up. And then when you go in, you use the Ikazushi magic, and then you get this... the shield that lets you keep the power up when you when the boss hits you, so you can get a few really nice hits in before you lose the shield.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah, so that is normally the best way to beat the boss.
So, but if you're killed by the boss, does it respawn you in the previous room?
No.
You just...
Nope, then you're fucked.
Okay, right, fair enough. Well, she's fucked, as well as you, but yeah. And she's going to get Joma squashied.
There's one more difference I also learned about rather late. When I finished the game for the first time, I was relieved but also disappointed, because you get a short ending scene with Joe and with or without his girlfriend standing on a cliff, and then that's it. No credits, nothing. I recently found out you get the credits if you play it on Japanese settings, so if you play it on a Japanese console. Then they have the full credit roll. And again, even weirder, I hope I get this right, when you get the good ending, you get an English credit roll. If you get the bad ending, you get a Japanese kanji and hiragana credit roll.
What are you trying to say with that? That's an interesting choice.
Huh.
Yeah, it's absolutely weird.
Curious.
So they just cut the credit out for the Western version of the game.
Hmm.
No, not true. It's on all cards. It just isn't played when you play it on the Western console.
How odd.
So just put in your American cartridge in a Japanese system, and you can see the whole system, or get yourself a mod or something like that. And you get all of that.
So after Revenge of Shinobi, after Shadow Dancer, we've had these 16-bit games. However, there were a few 8-bit Shinobi games and 8-bit Shinobi spin-offs that came out after those games. So they sort of exist in this weird sort of in-between land. And indeed, many of these games were not released in Japan or the US for that matter, but they're out there and they have the name Shinobi, so we don't want to not talk about them.
Mm.
But they do exist in a strange way in that we don't even know for sure when they came out. We're pretty sure one of them came out in 1990. The other one might have been 90, might have been 91. We really don't know. Online sources are not clear.
Mm.
So what I can tell you, I have a box of one of them in my hand, of the Cyber Shinobi, and that says clearly copyright 1990.
Okay.
But also, if I may say so, it's really bad.
Yeah.
Really. I played it again for this podcast, and... No, I'm sorry, it's not fun. Not really.
You know what it calls to mind for me, Thomas? Honestly, and I think you'll get where I'm coming from with this, is Strider 2, Strider Returns.
Yes.
Because this game, you play it, and the only thing that you can think is what the hell has happened. Because what it feels like to me is a microcomputer game that was ported to the Master System, yet the micro version doesn't exist. I wonder if it ever did. It's like playing an Atari ST game or something on your Master System, and it has choppy scrolling, it has no music, I don't think.
No, there's music.
There is. It's just
but choppy scrolling, bad animation, bad level design, ugly, squishy, like squashy, ugly graphics, and
they have a huge SAI in their UI in the screen. Yeah, all
yeah,
the
which
time.
Makes it feel even more like a micro game. You know, So I don't know what the hell happened here, but a lot of the level design is just you'll move forward, And then there'll just be enemies on the screen you have to kill to progress. And I'm like, this isn't Shinobi. The way you jump feels
it's
weird.
Not,
the way
yeah.
you even adhere to the ground feels weird. The way that everything feels weird and wrong. It's like an Atari game or like an early DOS game or something. It's really bad. Like,
you know, if I were to describe this game now, I would say it's more of a brawler, but on a 2D played with a bit of jumping mixed in.
Yeah, with no moves. Like, it's just shit.
I mean, you have a few moves, but the big difference, of course, is all the enemies take a couple of hits normally, and you only can progress if you kill all the enemies in a certain section. So that's very brawlery.
Yeah, and another thing about it that bums me out is it could have been really good. It's a cool idea. I like the way that some of the levels progress. I'm going to pray credit where it's due. It's got some nice big obstacles, some nice chunky-looking game, but
yeah,
the port of Shadow Dancer for the Master System is similarly quite choppy, yet it does something a bit like this, but it makes it work. And Cyber Shinobi, to me, as I've said, I compare it to Strider Part 2, because for me, it's Shinobi in name only. It's the only Shinobi game that I think is just crap.
Yeah, I think they tried too hard to make it look like a 16-bit game instead of doing what the Master System is actually good at.
Yeah, it's a real wide miss, this one. I really wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah. Some smaller sprites, some not as choppy. It could have been a good game.
They did a
couple of great 8-bit games later on, as we'll see very soon. But that's not one of them, I'm afraid.
And the last boss is...
I call it Carry On Up the Kaiba Shinobi, but it's not very funny. Go on.
The last boss is literally a brain in a jar, which I thought was funny in Revenge of Shinobi, but now it's a really big brain in a jar, and the ending calls it Mother Brain. Like, come on, isn't that actionable? Huh. That can't be right.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, well, I suppose if Spider-Man isn't, then...
You know, I mean, we all like brains in jars. Am I correct?
Oh, I love brains in jars,
right?
Yeah.
We all could agree on that. But it's just... Yeah, you know what I mean.
I mean, anytime you fight a big brain, like Gradius or something, I'm into it, you know?
I mean, we get some great brains in the next Shinobi episode, but not in this one.
But around the same time, we also see Alex Kidd in Shinobi World. But I say us.
Yes.
I say us, again, not in Japan, only overseas. I guess America got this one too, in Europe, but not Japan.
Yep, came to America.
And Stuart, I'm just going to let you talk about Alex Kidd for say, 10 minutes. Go ahead.
I mean, this is... I love this game. I think not only is it a really good spin-off, it's also, I would say, the best Alex Kidd game in terms of gameplay. I mean, I like Miracle World best, but there are a lot of problems with that game, as we've discussed in previous episodes. This is just a rollicking little action game, little action platformer with a bunch of cool moves. Like, you can do cool wall jumps, you can climb things and swing around them and turn into a fireball. It's got an absolutely bomb-ass remix of the Shinobi theme as well. And it is essentially a Parodius, but for Shinobi. So Shinobius, I don't know. because you are fighting parodies of the enemies and bosses from the original Shinobi. But although here it would be, of course, the Master System Shinobi, though it's taking off. But beautifully clean cartoon graphics. I mean, it's very good looking. It could almost, if you squint, it's 16-bit, like, color quality, at least, I would say. Run smoothly as you like. The exact opposite of Cyber Shinobi. Cool moves like deflecting enemy shurikens with your own sword when you've got one, that can then fly off into the air. It's pretty short, it's pretty easy, but it's super fun. And the fact that it's a Yoshio Yoshida game, Yoshio Y, my boy, who made things like Castle of Illusion, which you'll know is one of my all-time favorite games. And I mean the Master System version, not the Mega Drive one. That one can swivel, as good as it is. But no, this is really good. Up there with the best Master System games, I think, easily. One of the best platformers on the system and of the whole era, really.
I do like the fact that the lobster boss from the original Shinobi is, in this game, an actual lobster.
Yeah, and when you kill him, you crack open his shell and the kind of the flesh comes out. He turns into an actual lobster dish, yeah. Waste not, want not.
It's very cute. I think it's overall it's a very cute-looking game. And, you know, I have been harsh on Alex Kidd on the record in past Retronauts episodes.
Oh, you were right to be.
But
don't get me wrong.
This is a cute one. This is a cute game. It amuses me. It does.
I wish we'd gotten other things like Alex Kidd in Golden Axe World or Alex Kidd in Streets of Rage World or Alex Kidd in Sonic World, God forbid. But instead we got Alex Kidd in a used game shop because he's washed up in Sega Gaga, so...
Stu, since you're here, and I know you are a Game Gear expert.
I am a Game Gear expert.
I feel like we should probably talk a little bit about the GG Shinobis, because there's two.
Yep.
The Good Game Shinobi, yes, that's what it stands
1991 for. 1991 and 92.
I mean, I don't want to go on and on and on, but I think, and this is quite a hot take, I think there is a genuine school of thought where you could say that this is the best Shinobi game, the first one, because it has nothing wrong with it. It is this perfectly formed little platform adventure that has a Shinobi vibe, but everything has been tailored excellently to the small screen. It's a completely unique game. It's not a port. It's a new game where, Mega Man style, you choose a stage to go into to rescue one of your ninja pals, and each one of them has a different thing they can do, which doesn't give it a Metroidvania sort of vibe. It just means you've got options. So any scenario you get into, you can think, one of the ninjas I've rescued, what can they do? One of them's got a grappling hook. One of them can walk on sort of ceilings and helps you with platforming. So you've got to keep in mind all these different abilities you've got. But really, it's just a very clean little game. It reminds me of stuff like, again, Castle of Illusion, because, yes, it's very brief. You can beat this game very quickly if you know what you're doing. But it's just so well-designed that it's always a treat to play through. It's always fair and fun, and the challenge is there, but it's not overbearing and it's not unreasonable. I think it's fantastic, and it's got, again, Yuzo Koshiro on the music on 8-bit, which is not super common with Sega, but I know I've said it about the Master System one, but I mean, this is one of the best Game Gear games for me. I'm pretty sure I got 4 marks when I reviewed it. I've played it lots of times, and I think it's an essential. It's brilliant. Brilliant game.
I would even say it might be, for me, the best one of the Game Gear.
I mean, it is for me. I think it's better than the second one.
Yes.
Although that is good too. The issue for me is the GG Shinobi is a very focused get to the end, beat the boss. And yes, you can choose the order, but that's your goal, is to finish it. And GG Shinobi 2, as good as it is, it adds in an element of collectathon-ish, like you have to find the crystal in each level, which requires you to get powers from elsewhere in the game, from the other ninjas, return to levels you've already done. And some people love that, and I don't. I do not like replaying levels because I have to. I'd like to choose to replay them if I want to. It's one of the reasons why, with apologies, I like Mario World less than Mario 3, as good as it is. And it's fucking good, okay? Don't get mad at me again. But GG Shinobi,
for me, you have an element like this in the first one already, because every stage has a health power-up as well, where you can permanently extend your health bar if you know where to look and if you have the right Shinobi with you. But it's mandatory in the first one. You don't have to do it.
Yeah, that to me makes all the difference. But what I'm saying here is GG Shinobi 2, for my personal taste, we're talking 4 out of 5 versus 5 out of 5 for the first one. We are talking a very, 4. Very good 5 game.
4.5 out of 5.
Yes, very, very good game versus perfect game. That's my personal take on it. I think if you have a Game Gear and you haven't got GG Shinobi, then what the hell are you doing?
I mean, that was the game I really wanted to have a Game Gear for back in the day. I didn't get one because I had a Game Boy, and you know, right, when you're young, you don't get any console you like. But a friend of mine had one, and whenever I saw the guy, I had to play Shinobi on the Game Gear.
Yeah, and ignore him completely.
Because it was just so good.
And there is a lot of cool stuff, like the stage. I think it's in the first game. There's a stage where you're sort of roaring along in on the back of vehicles and in traffic at high speed.
Yes, yes. Yep. That's first game. Absolutely.
With parallax scrolling as well.
Yeah, it's incredible. And the fact that the graphics have been scaled down so small and yet are still perfectly readable and fair. But the GG Shinobi 2, again, great game. But I think that the locations just aren't quite as cool and interesting. And this is a bit unreasonable, but it feels like an aspect game, because I'm pretty sure it is. And aspect games, while they are good, they have a very interchangeable feel to me. And as soon as I picked this one up, I went, oh, aspect, hello again, my old friends. And It's just, yeah, it's like Sonic 2 on the Game Gear versus Sonic on the Game Gear. It's just not quite right, but it's still very fun.
Yeah, this was a special one for me because this is the only game, I'm pretty sure this is the only game I actually played on a Game Gear, because I didn't have one, but I remember visiting, we were on vacation, and like visiting some, like, you know, one of my father's associates somewhere, and like their son had a Game Gear. He's like, oh yeah, check this out. And he let me play it, and like he had this game, and I was like, oh my god, this game is awesome. And I played it, like, we were probably supposed to like talk to people or hang out, like, no, I just want to play this game. So years later, when this came to the 3DS Virtual Console, I absolutely bought it. So I have this on my Japanese 3DS.
Yeah, it's really cool that it got re-released.
By the way, I quickly checked. It's not an Aspect game.
Oh, it's not? Wow.
It's
okay,
not.
Well, color me...
It's Sega internal. I checked the creators of the game, and they stayed with Sega, made stuff like, for example, Virtua Racing Deluxe, Metalhead on 32X, Chaotix.
Oh, Jesus, Chaotix. Ugh.
Yep. That's the planner, so the design of the game.
Can't win them all.
We also did Nightshade. Nice.
Oh, that's a cool game. We'll get to that later.
And Blue Dragon as well. Huh, interesting.
Unfortunately, that stink of Chaotix has dumbed down their entire gameography and rendered it meaningless to me.
But yeah, I think the thing that most stands out is, again, the music by Yuzo Koshiro, of course.
Yeah.
Yes, and in this case, the sequel, it's Koshiro and Motohiro Kawashima, the two guys who worked together on Streets of Rage 2, and then especially 3. So, very good music.
And, I mean, that is one hell of a combo, these two guys.
Hmm.
What I also love is in the first game, they brought back some themes from the Mega Drive game, which also sound amazing on the Game Gear. They brought back Terrible Beat, and they brought back the music from the Super Shinobi intro for one stage.
Very, very cool.
Also, of course, we should quickly mention at least that you get the different ninjas with different abilities, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And switch them anytime.
Because I think that's key to the game, because you start with your normal ninja, which is probably Joe Musashi. I don't know if he actually is this time, but never mind. You know, just the usual red and white guy swinging a sword. No shuriken this time for him. And then in every stage you can rescue another guy, and they all have their different abilities. For example, the pink guy, which I usually get first, can stick to ceilings and throw bombs as a mid-range weapon. He's quite cool. The yellow guy has this... you wrote down there a diamond in the notes that it's called Hadouken in Japanese.
Yes.
This energy ball attack that you can even charge. And his DLC can walk on water, which is great for the stage where you rescue, I think the blue guy, I'm not sure.
The implication is that this is the second coming of Christ, obviously.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, then you have a guy who can throw shuriken and can double jump. And finally, a guy with a grappling hook. So I think in terms of weapons, you are pretty much set in this game. Lots of fun stuff for everybody to play around with.
It reminds me a little bit of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Hero Turtles game on the NES, where you have to change turtles, use their different weapons for each sort of situation, although it's not quite as strategic as that. But switching characters is very quick and easy, so you're very much encouraged to do so. And once you do have all of them, it does feel quite cool, like you're a little ninja army storming the Zed. You know, it's Neo City, the final stage. It's quite easy for a Shinobi game, but that's kind of standard for the Game Gear, so it didn't bother me.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea, right? Five ninjas, color-coded, different weapons. Did we hear that before somewhere? I'm not sure.
Nothing springs to mind.
Nothing, right?
I think that's going to do it for Retronauts as far as Shinobi goes. We're calling this Shinobi Mission 1. We're going to wrap it up right here at the end of the 8-bit. So we'll be back in the future and talk about the next Shinobi, because there's still a lot more Shinobi. Not as much as you'd hope.
Yep, I want to mention...
there's more Shinobi to come.
I'd like to mention one last thing, because one thing that came to mind when I looked at these games, all of these games you talked about now are really available nowadays. None of them is in any way too rare or too unavailable or too not playable anywhere nowadays. So even stuff like Cyber Shinobi, if you want to get the game, I paid $14 for my copy in box.
In box.
So really that stuff is quite doable.
It helps with Cyber Shinobi, of course, that nobody wants it because it's such a piece of old shit. So you can just walk in and get it pretty much anywhere.
Even Super Shinobi, right? You have it on collections. You have it on the Mega Games too. You have the standalone game. All of them are really, really affordable. I think the only one that isn't is if you want the Japanese version 1 of the game, which all the cool stuff in there. If you want to get that, you can pay a bit more, but even that is not prohibitively expensive at least. So that's finally a series of classic games that can really be bought and played even today.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice.
Not unreachable. You know what's not unreachable also? Retronauts, we are very reachable. Indeed, you're listening to this podcast. You can listen to this podcast for free, and we really appreciate it if you listen for free. However, if you go to patreon.com/retronauts, you can listen to this episode, every episode, a week early in a higher quality bitrate for just $3 a month. And for $5 a month, which is just $2 more than the other number, you get bonus episodes every month, two or even three, depending on how many Fridays we have. You get weekly columns from me, and I read you the column. You get a community podcast every month, often hosted by me. You get access to our Discord, where me and Stu and other people are hanging out all the time, chatting about games, movies, whatever.
I'm really annoying on there, yeah.
Stu, we're selling the Discord. Don't tell him you're annoying.
Only $5. That's a pathetic amount of money. Anyone could afford that.
But yes, thank you very much for listening to Retronauts. We will definitely continue this conversation at a future time, because there's lots more ninjas to happen. Stuart, if the internet wants to find you, where should they find you? Are you in a ninja training school?
Well, I think everyone knows already, so I thought for novelty value, I'd tell you again while eating some chicken, if that's okay. just a second. Find me on Retronauts and Blue Sky. And you can buy my book. All games are good. This was a mistake. Please talk to Thomas. I've made a terrible mistake.
Well, okay, let me just jump in here. Stuart has hopefully not choked at his chicken.
I'm very hungry. Find my...
I can emphasize nothing. Is it a good chicken, at least?
No. It's crispy. No.
What is it?
It was a mistake in general, just as a whole. I'd rather move on. It's a very traumatic time for me.
Okay, I see. Yeah, let's skip the chicken then.
Yeah.
As well, you can find me on Blue Sky at Tapir Fortuna and read my articles in German M Games. If you want to see the website, it's maniac.de. It's in German, though, so be warned.
Be warned, German.
Back to the chicken, man.
Everyone knows where to find me already. I'm unavoidable. I'm vast and omnipotent. And, I mean, the reason I mentioned the annoyance on the Discord is that, you know, you can go on the Discord with your privileges having paid for the show, and you can say anything you want to me, and I'm not allowed to retaliate.
But you can touch people in your mind.
Yeah, yeah. And also, that $5, you know, that all goes into my chicken fund, which is ever growing.
Please. We're getting close to 2 hours, folks. My name is Diamond Fight. I've been the host of this somewhat train wreck adjacent podcast, but don't worry, you can find me on the internet. Look for Fight Club, my FEIT, my last name, CLUB. It's an English word, you know. I have a website, fightclub.me. It's a homemade website. It's a little bit low tech. It's very low tech, maybe too low tech, but is it? Maybe it's up to you. What if it's like a ninja? What if it's actually a secret high tech website hiding behind the low tech website, like the work of CyberZed? Maybe.
Yeah, it's not.
Good night.